Good morning, everybody. This is the KPK Outdoor Show. I'm Bob Sims. Thank you for tuning in this morning. I got to say, just before I got into work, I glanced up at the eastern sky, and there's the tiniest sliver of the moon. I mean to tell you, it was a sliver, you know, but it was really neat to see. And then I think Venus was just above it. I just tried to look it up to make sure it was Venus. I think Venus was right. It was pretty bright, so kind of a cool sight for just a little bit before sunrise. The highlight this week, I think, has got to be the fact that something great didn't happen, but, you know, not to be negative about it, but for the first time since mid-June, salmon fishing out the Golden Gate took a little dip. And the good news there is that's what happens when they stage and start coming up the river. Now, that doesn't mean a whole bunch of salmon left the ocean. It's just that salmon sometimes just go off to bite when they're ready to make a change. You know, I mean, everything can be going along just fine out there. All of a sudden, one day they don't bite. And the day before and after that, they just bite like crazy. Well, what caused that? Well, I don't know. Nobody knows. But something happened to affect salt. Well, that kind of happened this week. And it's kind of funny because all the fishermen down in the ocean say, oh, that was just a fisherman went off to bite. It'll be back. And, of course, everybody up the river says the salmon are on their way. Well, guess what? The good news is they're both right because the salmon did bounce back a little bit. And, yeah, there's more action in the river. You can start to see the consistency now. And a good indication of that is, and we'll have a couple reports today, is there's quite a few stripers in the Delta. And so there's going to be a fair number of people out trolling for them. And when they incidentally catch a salmon here and there, you know there's a bunch of salmon coming up the river. So whatever the salmon fishing is in the river, it's going to get better in the upcoming weeks, okay? But we'll have reports on both. I went over to the east side of the Sierra this week, Tuesday through Thursday, and fished the East Carson River and checked everybody on the East Carson. I went over to the West Walker. I checked dozens of people up there. I fished down low in the West Walker, down below Colville, and it's odd you say below because when you go below, you're going north, and that doesn't seem right. But that river runs from south to north, so up toward Topaz Lake. The whole river has got fishing in it, and that's very unusual for mid to late August because usually the river has dropped so low, the water temperature is warm, and those fish get out of there. I think they go back up until they get cooler water. But they don't seem to be really plentiful in the lower river in late summer. This year's the exception. And there's some beauties in there. There was a 5-pound brown, either a 5.5-pound brown taken. There was like a 4-pound brown. That's very unusual for the West Walker. We all encourage people to throw those fish back because they don't plant them. And, you know, that's what the legends are made of, right? You bet. But rainbows, I mean, up to 18 inches, beautiful fish. The canyon of the West Fork, and we'll go into detail a little bit later on. Because the drop in there is pretty substantial along Highway 395 between Pickle Meadows and Walker, there's very few spots to fish because there's so much water. But every place you can fish, like a big boulder in the river that creates a big eddy or around a bend that creates an eddy or a pool, there's fish there. And there's one story of a place just exactly like that where two guys hooked and released 30 fish yesterday. So that can happen. It's just as time goes on, it's going to be a great September. That's what I'm going to tell you right now up in that river. Up in Pickle Meadows, nobody was fishing Pickle Meadows, but I checked other fishermen, and they were catching fish up there, too. So beautiful up there, absolutely beautiful. Anyway, we'll talk about down at Lake Chabot, just to show you what kind of not a big deal, but it's, the lake record crappie was caught this week. And just to show you what can come out of some of the Bay Area lakes, we'll have a good report on Pardee for Kokanee. It turned back on. I mean, it's not wide open, red hot, but people are getting limits of nice 14 to 15 inch fish out of Pardee. That's interesting. Delta black bass is going along pretty doggone good. Delta stripers are going a little bit better than that. Seems to be a lot of fish down there. And I'll tell you, people are catching them pretty good. San Joaquin has a smaller fish. Sacramento has a larger fish. And on we go. Up at Eagle Lake, it's interesting. I was talking to Val Aubrey last night, and you'll hear her today. I asked her to take the good years out and the bad years out, and how does Eagle Lake stack up this year? And she says, well, it's not quite up to snuff, but, you know, we learned a lot last year. Because in the drought, it's developed this blue-green algae in the summer months up at Eagle Lake, and the fish are there, although there's not as many fish in Eagle Lake as we're used to over a long period of time. There's still enough for you to get your two-fish limit, and there's a lot of nice fish. In fact, she caught a 4-pound rainbow yesterday trolling, and we'll tell you how to do it. But it's just learning how to fish that lake under those conditions. So that's an interesting interview. I'm sure you'll like it. We'll check down in the June Lakes area. That's going to be another place that I think is just going to be fabulous this fall. Good fishing down in that whole area. Jim Johnston would join us in the 7 o'clock hour talking about the North Yuba. He says fishing isn't really red hot, but it is very consistent. So that's a good, honest report. That means you can go out and you can have some fun. You can catch some fish. And they're catching rainbows up to 15 inches, which isn't as big as they normally catch them. But after this year's flood, I think it's just an indication of next year. I think is going to be a banner year. Don Paganelli has been at Folsom Lake. He'll call in, give us a report there. Folsom is an overlooked lake, but a guy like Don knows how to fish it in mid-August and catch fish out of it, bass we're talking about here. And I've even heard some pretty nice trout being taken to Folsom. Getting down a little bit deeper, but trout up to like 2-2.25 pounds, that's pretty good right in your own backyard. So that all that coming up in the next 2 hours and 45 minutes on the KFBK Outdoor Show. Thanks for being here. Well, the latest salmon opener occurred up in Fort Bragg last Tuesday, and I know they caught some fish out there. The conditions weren't that good, but they still caught fish, probably an average of a couple of fish per boat. Most of the fish were schoolies. A couple of boats had bigger fish, but I haven't heard what's happened since, so let's check with Captain Barry Canavero. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob.
Well, you said the weather was going to settle down, but I haven't heard anything. What happened with the salmon?
Yeah, that crazy weather. What a life you live in, Fort Bragg. I have 2 more weeks and I'm coming back.
Yeah.
But anyhow, the opener was surprisingly pretty good. The first day, there wasn't that many boats out. The weather was kind of shaky. But they did catch fish, and up to retired game warden up there has a catamaran right where we are. He was out. He got 3 nice fish in the teens, and the biggest one was 20.
Ooh.
And then the next day, everybody went. I mean, it was a zoo. And
all they had to hear was a couple fish were caught,
yeah,
huh?
That's exactly right, because really nobody knew what to expect. And so everybody headed for the reef, including us. And it was crappy weather. It was south wind, and very few fish were caught. So the next day, the forecast is for the same thing, crappy weather. And it turns out to be glassy calm. And there was a pretty good bite at what we call Middle Bay. It was, you know, it's halfway between the buoy and the reef. And they were all decent fish, and it was a pretty good bite. A friend of mine, Captain Tuna, he had 7 fish for 3 guys.
That's good.
And that was pretty good. He didn't drop any fish.
Tell him he's under arrest.
No, no.
It's one over the limit for 3 guys.
I know, but he had his deckhand in himself. And that's how he posted it, too. The crew got a fish. Anyhow, and then the weather's pretty good yesterday. Steve was right, yeah. And today, take a look at the weather forecast for today. 25 knots of wind with gusts to 40 miles an hour on the inside. How's that?
You can't win.
I'm telling you. And then we are trying to put together a few tuna trips. We got a little break maybe next week in the middle of the week. We'll know more. It slows down a little bit on Tuesday. A couple of boats went out on Thursday tuna fishing, and I wouldn't have went looking at the weather forecast, but whether these guys, the 2 guys that I know for sure, you know, they're half crazy anyhow, but it was, 9 and 10 foot rollers, but there wasn't any wind. So they got out, and both those boats got in the numbers of 40 fish per boat, and one of the boats got a 125-pound bluefin.
Wow.
Now, that was south. The guys that went straight out to the numbers that we had been fishing for the last, month, got nothing. Now, they were pretty small boats. I don't know how they did it. I would never go out there with that kind of conditions in an 18-foot aluminum boat that's riveted besides. I wouldn't even think about it.
Mm-hmm.
But they did. Some of these people, just because they got a boat, they think they can go do these things. They got to respect the ocean, Nobody else went out that far. And this one guy went out 36 miles and couldn't find the water. Well, I don't know that he knew what he was doing because the water's at 20 miles. So, but anyhow, hopefully we get out next week for tuna. We're, trying to book some trips in there now. And if not, we'll be doing combination of rock cod, ling cod, and salmon.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go get our rock cod and ling cod first, and then come back and work the salmon. So I got a new area for rock cod and ling cod, big fish, and we're going to work that up. It's what we call virgin country. It hasn't been worked very hard, so it's very much like Westport was 6-7 years ago,
mm-hmm.
when we got all those big ling cod, and just nobody goes there. So we're hoping to
is
be
it,
able to
is
do
it
that
north or south?
It's south. So just depending on the wind,
yeah.
Don't like that north wind. What they got today, I'm sitting at. In camp, I'm not going today.
You're just not going to go get beat up again.
Yeah, I don't know if it's my old age or what it is, but I just can't beat up my customers. Majority of my customers are not young. They're my age, older, and close to it. And the reason they stay with us is because of that reason, is that we're going to take care of them. And we're not going to go out and beat them up. And I have a husband-wife combo that book a month's worth of trips. They charter the whole boat. They don't want anybody else on the boat but them. But they're old. And he's probably maybe a little bit better than me walking. And, we take care of these people. They've been with me for 30 years, 40 years, so... There's a reason for that. We take care of them. We're not going to take them out and beat them up.
Yeah.
And I get criticized for that, but that's the way it goes. I'm old myself. I don't walk very well.
Well, it's not so much doing it once in a while, but it's just been so consistent there this year. And And by the way, if it makes you feel any better, Eureka up in that has even had a worse year than you've had.
Yeah, I know.
And to this right now, all this week, they haven't even been able to get out rock cod, lingcod fishing because of the wind.
Yeah. Well, I mean, actually, there were some pretty nice days this week. But, you know, the good thing about it, I kind of tell people that, you know, that especially ones that are camped there or in a motel and going to be for a couple of days, hey, let's go out and we'll know right away, you know.
Yeah.
But if the south wind is blowing or you got big north winds that they're talking about today. Now, I mean, this weather forecast has not been 100% right.
What a surprise.
Yeah, surprise. But, you know, we just got to, you know, whatever. We got two weeks left. We're going to try to get at least 3 to 4 tuna trips in the 2 weeks. And then I really want some of my good customers to really see what it is to catch some big lingcod.
Yeah.
And
That'd be interesting to hear about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's a good area, and there's a lot of fish there. So it's just, you know, when you go south, you just have to be careful because of the wind. So
you got to come back.
Yep, that's it. But we'll be, you know, back in a couple of weeks. I've already got a few trips booked in September. And from what I hear, the fishing's pretty good. Of course, when I get here, it'll probably turn around. But I know that they're putting up with wind, too, just like we are.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, it never blows in the Delta. Only when
right.
You want to go fishing. But anyhow, we're kind of looking forward to getting home.
Yeah, well, you know.
It's been a long summer. We've been gone a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
We fished a lot of water that, under normal conditions, we would have never fished. And, but we didn't get skunked on any of them, so that was good.
Okay. All right, Barry. Well, we'll see what the weather brings us next week. Have a good week, your last couple. Hope it's a good one for you.
I hope so. The next, we're really looking forward for a few more tuna trips. So we got a little break in the weather. If anybody, you know, give me a call.
Okay.
And we got an open load going on Wednesday. And it takes 5 people for a charter. The charter's $1,500 or $300 a person. So, but it's well worth it if you, you know, never been tuna fishing.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Barry.
Sure.
Bye. Barry Canavero up in Fort Bragg to book a trip. You want to get on a tuna boat? Rock cod, lingcod, 916-870-4225. That's 870-4225. Right after the break, we'll be back with Rob Reimers, who's just putting his boat in on the Feather River, talking salmon. Don't go away. Well, you have to get out early to beat the crowds when it's salmon season. Plus, some of the best fishing takes place right at the crack of dawn, and that's what Rob Reimers is doing. Got his boat in, I would imagine, up by the outlet on the Feather River, and he joins us now. Hi, Rob. Hello, Rob. Is Rob with us? Is the pot up? Everything's there. Well, he didn't hang up, so he must be doing something. He's been hanging on for 5 minutes. Anyway, I'll try to kill some time here. I talked to him last night, and I said, well, what's going on? Is it picking up? He says, well, it's not good, but he says we can see a difference. You know, there's more fish being caught all around. That doesn't mean the fishing is great by any means, but it means that, you know, compared to a couple of weeks ago, yeah, there's fish in the area. So I think he's just trying to call me back here, see if that's the case. He couldn't call at 6 because he was going to be back trolling, and he's going to have to run the boat so he wouldn't be able to call. And so, yep, that's him. Put him on hold. How come this goofy line doesn't show him hanging up? I know he doesn't have 2 cell phones. Oh, I see. Okay. All right. Well, anyway, we'll give him some time. If he doesn't show, he doesn't show. He'll call us when he can. I went up to the east side of the Sierra this week. I got to tell you something, too. On Tuesday evening, I got up to Markleyville late. So I really didn't have time to fish. So I went from the Hangman's Bridge about 7 in the evening. And, I caught every... I talked to every fisherman I saw. There was a couple fishermen cleaning fish at the Carson River Resort. I talked to them. And I talked to everybody I had access to, which is just about every... And you know what? Everybody was catching fish on the East Carson. And then the next morning, I had scheduled to go in with Tim Fesco of Meadowcliff Lodge. We were going to take his side-by-side awesome ATV into the lower section of the East Carson on the Nevada border, and the river was solid mud from the thunderstorms the day before. But then that takes about a day and a half to clear up. So that's what you face on the east side with the thunderstorm. So one evening it was clear, everybody's catching fish. Next day it's mud. Rob is with us now. Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Bob. Can you hear me now?
I can.
I could hear you, but you couldn't hear me for some reason.
Yeah. Cell phones, Rob. Cell phones.
Yeah.
So I was just explaining how you were telling me last night that the fishing isn't good or great, but you can notice the improvement.
Yeah, we're starting to get, some fish filtering in. It's not off the hook by any means, but we're starting to get fish, and, the fish you're getting now are really fresh.
Yeah.
So,
some of the nicest of the year, I know.
Exactly.
Well, they just shoot up from the ocean. They don't dilly-dally, do they?
No, they don't. They just keep going pretty steady pace all the way up to here before the water's cool enough, and then they'll hang out here until they're ready to spawn.
And for the first time, just to confirm what you're saying, over on the Sacramento, we heard some fish around Corning being caught. That's the first time we've noticed anything, with the exception of an occasional fish here and there over there. So that's good news.
Yeah, that's good news. Coleman Hatchery is really expecting a really poor return up there this year because they had 100% trucking, and they think they're going to stray. I guess last year they found Coleman Hatchery fish everywhere, in every river, everywhere. So they're trying to figure out how to fix that. Our club is trying to get some pipes put in there so we can pump Sacramento River water through the hatchery, and then that should alleviate the problem.
That's interesting.
Yeah, because it's Hat Creek water that comes out of there, and Battle Creek, and they figure it's such a faint scent, coming into the Sacramento River. By the time you get down, towards Sacramento, they just can't really find their way back.
Well, all salmon are going to stray a little bit, but the thing about the Coleman, by trucking those fish, and if we hadn't trucked those fish, think of what we wouldn't have had in the ocean this year. But they don't have time to imprint.
So
it's a difficult situation. Do we want to just, like if we didn't truck the fish, the real problem, as we all know, is the main problem is the Delta pumps. And they did a study a few years ago where if there's a salmon that spawn, let's just use 100 for a round figure. Let's say there's 100 little salmon smolts swimming down the river. Well, a certain percentage is going to be taken by predators and all this kind of stuff. But before the pumps, you'd have maybe 20 to 30% of those smolts make it out the Golden Gate. With the pumps, you get 8% survive to the western edge of the Delta. So the pumps are just killing the salmon runs, and nothing's going to be done about that.
Yeah, and you got to do what you can up here.
Yeah.
And the reason that we think the pumping Sacramento River water into that hatchery is going to work is because they truck the fish out of the Feather River here, and we seem to be doing okay here, you know, run-wise.
Sure.
So we're really pushing for that.
Well, you know, anything is worth trying, I think. So, well, listen, tell me about the fishing right now. Are you being able to cherry pick up and down the riffle in some of the different riffles and holes, or are you just hanging out in one spot?
Well, I didn't fish yesterday, but I heard the runs were producing fairly well yesterday. I've mostly been fishing just below the whitewater up here, you know, fishing that little bit of run and in the whitewater. And we've been doing all right. You know, you pick up a fish or two a day. And you know, the east run has been working better, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, hey, we're starting anyway. Is there any fish up in the up above the outlet in the cooler water?
You know, I can't honestly say. I'm sure there. You know, you get a bunch of fish coming through here. They got to be going up there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Well, that water is always a lot cooler than it is above that after bay outlet.
Yeah. Well, you know, you only got like about 50 yards here that you can fish, and then. And then it's closed down after that.
So. Oh, they lowered the closed zone, huh?
Yeah, basically it's where this ramp is. And then from there down, you can fish. Above there, you can't in the low flow.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I mean, you fish your steelhead stuff, but not salmon.
Yeah, okay, I got you. Well, nobody can complain about salmon restrictions. We got to bring those fish back, right?
Right, exactly.
Okay, Rob. Well, good luck today, okay? If you get something before we go off the air, give us a buzz back.
All righty.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Rob Reimers, Rustic Rob's Guide Service. You can book a trip with Rob, 530-632-0051. Yeah, if they hadn't done that truck, you know, the Golden Gate Salmon Association really has been pressing for that. And everybody's pretty much convinced without that it had been a disaster in the ocean this year. That helps the fish survive, even though we may have trouble with imprinting and getting them back to their original waters. I mean, what's your choice, losing all the salmon? I mean, they're faced with some hard choices. It's a tough call to make. And in the meantime, because the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service are what they are. They're all concerned about genetics and everything else, which most people think is a little late because these salmon have been co-mixing for so many years. But that doesn't help matters anyway. I mean, they get off on these tangents, and they just don't seem to come up with anything positive. So we'll see what happens. Salmon are in trouble, and only time will tell. We'll be back with Mr. Dan Bakker right after this. I have a guess, and it's just a guess, but knowing that Sacramento County, along with other counties and about a million other people, filed suit against the state for the tunnels, my guess is that that's what Mr. Dan Bakker of the Fish Sniffer is going to talk about this morning.
Wow, that was a great guess.
the you know what's hitting the fan, isn't it?
Yeah, that's good. Well, it's not good. I wish they'd pull, you know, the state and federal governments would pull out of this whole plan, but this is about the only way we can get them to do it. Yesterday a whole bunch of people filed lawsuits against the Delta Tunnels environmental impact report that was approved by the Brown and the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
And that was back in July. And the one that I concentrated on was yesterday, a California Indian tribe, two fishing groups, and two environmental organizations. They filed lawsuit against the environmental mm-hmm. impact statement, and those groups were the Winnemem Wintu Tribe, the North Coast Rivers Alliance, the Institute for Fisheries Resources, the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Association, and what theirs was over a number of issues, but one was the California Environmental Quality Act. The second was the public trust document, public trust doctrine, and the other was the Sacramento San Joaquin Delta Reform Act of 2009. So essentially, you know, this whole project is violating every just about every law there is out there. And those are the ones that they picked. They picked to sue on. And I briefly looked at the documents for Sacramento County and for San Joaquin County, and they sued for roughly similar reasons. It's hard to follow. I don't know which other ones did it, but those are the ones that I got.
Well, I guess Monday's a deadline. They expect a whole bunch more to be in by Monday night.
Yeah, so we'll find out. But I'm glad everybody's stepping up the plate, particularly Sacramento County and San Joaquin.
Well, it's the only option left. You know, you and I, for how long have we talked about these tunnels and the bought and paid for scientists and the political influence put on government agencies like the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the National Marine Fisheries Service that actually come out and say, we have proven that these tunnels will not hurt anything.
Right.
I mean, the only answer to that kind of crap is suits.
Right.
And that's what's happening.
And what I really do got to say, it's beyond appalling that, you know, we've known for years and known from all the scientific studies that these tunnels would hasten the extinction of Central Valley Steelhead, Sacramento River Salmon, Delta and Longfin Smelt, green sturgeon, and a whole bunch of other species. And, you know, up until a couple months ago, all the state and federal studies were indicating that there would you know, that these tunnels would pose jeopardy to these species.
That's before the political machine got rolling.
Right. And but then back in mid-April, the Secretary of Interior Ryan Zinke and Jerry Brown met, and we'll never know exactly what happened in that meeting, but you can bet that if there was somebody taking notes in that meeting, they basically discussed fast-tracking the tunnels.
Yeah.
I mean, among other projects, too. But, I must say I'm really, really appalled by the scientists at the Department of Fish and Wildlife. I'm also really upset about Peter.
Well, now, wait a minute. Now, the scientists for U.S. Fish and Wildlife could have come up with one conclusion, but the political leaders of the U.S.
could have changed
that.
We're talking about they were basically forced, but I'm talking a higher level staff or directors of the department. But let's see, we've got CDFW staff, and the director. We got the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and National Marine Fisheries Service, and we also got Dr. Peter Moyle, who, you know, has been a very good scientist on many issues regarding the Delta, but also helping greenwash this project. And I'm sorry, but we all know, and there's nobody, I don't think anybody is stupid enough to believe that, you know, this wasn't manipulated.
I know. It definitely was.
Yeah.
So I think Butte County Supervisor Bill Connolly said it, because they're part of the suits, said it perfectly. He says, overall, it's just the arrogance of the rest of the state in not considering the people that supply their water.
Wow, that's great.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Bacher.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye. Dan Bacher of the Fish Pepper. If you subscribe, call them at 800-748-6599. They'll call you back during the week, okay? All right, when we come back, I don't know what we're going to lead off since Rob Reimers was on at 5:30, but chances are it'll have to do with salmon. Don't go away. Welcome back to the second hour of the KFPK Outdoor Show. I'm Bob Sims, Saturdays 5 to 8 here on KFPK, 1530 AM and 93.1 FM. I just got a text from Rob Reimers and a picture of a salmon, so it didn't take him long, did it? We'll see how he ends up at the tail end of the show, okay? Well, the salmon fishing took a little dip this week and out in the ocean. But it's kind of rebounded, but this happens every single year. I noticed that one party boat earlier in the week had, you know, this is a full party boat, had like three salmon. Even R.J. Waldron, who you're going to hear from right now, couldn't fill out, I think, one or two days, but he was back to getting limits yesterday, so it has rebounded. But that's normal for this time of year. It'll be going along good out there. Then we get another lull. Then we'll hear about a few more fish in the river. That's the way it's always been. But in the meantime, here's that conversation with RJ. RJ, for the first time this summer, in what's been a fabulous year out of the gate, I noticed that the boats didn't come back with full limits. And I'm thinking, well, they got a few of them have to start up the river at some point. Maybe this is just the beginning of that. But did that fishing bounce back from earlier in the week?
I think so. I mean, today we had limits. The bigger boats, a lot of the fish were over a fish or rod. The morning this morning, and it could have been tide, was really slow. And then about 10:30, 11 o'clock, it really picked up. The bite turned on. There was fish today from the towers all the way down to Pedro Point again.
Oh.
But it seemed like, you know, I was listening to the radios, and it seemed like all at the same time they started biting. So it must have been a tidal thing.
Yeah. What tide was it?
It was the incoming tide.
So it turned and started to come in, and then that's when it got better?
Actually, it's the bottom or the very top of the tide.
Okay.
Top of the tide and beginning of the alco, like that.
Uh huh.
Yesterday and today we had tons of whale activity. We were near the main shipping channel for the last couple days, and tons of whale activity, anchovies, top to bottom. And today we caught a lot of our fish actually out of the bait, but. The bait is really thick there.
Wow, that's good. I mean, bait, whales, salmon, it's a healthy thing going on out there.
Yeah, I just think we had a little lull at the beginning of the week.
Yeah.
I think through the weekend we'll see some better scores throughout the fleet.
Yeah.
A lot of bigger fish now. I mean, we're seeing probably, I would say today we probably had a, you know, like a 12-pound average, but we did have a couple fish. One was 24 pounds and couple other ones right there around 20 pounds. So.
Beautiful. Well, a 12-pound average, a good solid average anyway.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
So, hey, let me ask you, RJ, are the you know, you say from the towers clear on down to Pedro Point, are people getting them all, like, close to shore and a few miles offshore, or what's the deal?
Yeah, everything's pretty close to shore, you know, a couple miles offshore. You know, I think probably the end of the channel is the furthest offshore people are fishing. You know, I had a friend that fished at the towers and did real well, and I had another friend that caught fish at Pedro Point today. So, you know, there's good fishing.
Well, you know, it's like this time of year, a lot of times those fish get concentrated in closer to shore, like from Duxbury down to Muir Beach and to the North Bar and everything. And sometimes they're not even a mile offshore and catching fish. Is that happening?
Not yet. I have not seen that yet. And that, I mean, well, that, I think it's going to come.
That's
it's
almost come. Good news because that always happens just before they start up the rivers.
That's right.
Yeah. So, same depth, you know, 25 to 40, right in there, RJ?
Today we had fish to about 65, 70.
But we had, I'd say our best depth was 31 pulls.
31 pulls.
31 pulls is our best depth.
And you got a 2-pound ball?
2.5-pound ball.
Okay. So you're down, my goodness, you're over 25 feet or right close to 30?
Yep.
Okay. All right. And the weather, how's that been?
Absolutely gorgeous. The last 2 days have been black calm, little west breeze, really nice weather.
The whole thing is just heaven for a salmon fisherman, huh?
It is. It's really nice.
That's R.J. Waldron. He skippers the six-packer Sundance out of Emeryville. You can call him. You can book on the Sundance by calling Emeryville Sport Fishing Center at area code 510-652-3403. R.J. did say grass was a problem, so you really got to be diligent bringing your line up every 5 or 6 minutes and checking it. From the sea up to the mountains, I talked to Todd Sedaro of Creekside Lodge in Markleyville about the East Carson. Well, Todd, it was an interesting few days I spent over there. Of course, I saw you on Tuesday afternoon, and right after I went up the river, and for the first time this year, everybody I talked to from the Hangman's Bridge all the way up to Silver Creek, including the two people that were cleaning fish at the cleaning station at the Carson River Resort when you were there, everybody had fish. That's pretty good fishing.
It is. The East and the West are both fishing extremely well right now. There's a lot of happy people out there.
Yeah. Of course, we did have a little hitch in the get-along. I was going to take ATVs back in the lower section, the trophy section of the East Carson, on Wednesday, and solid mud from it was interesting how clear it was Tuesday night and solid mud first thing Wednesday morning.
Exactly, and it stayed like that for about 2 or 3 days, and now it's looking pretty darn good. They're nice and green, right?
It looked good yesterday evening.
Exactly.
Yeah, and people were catching fish, so that was good.
Exactly. It took about 2 days for that mud to clear out.
Yeah.
It looks gorgeous again.
And then I drove up and I saw for sure that the mud is coming from Silver Creek and not the Carson itself.
Exactly.
Yeah. There's got to just be a big slide or something up there somewhere. I can't put my finger on where it is. Do you know?
You know, I don't know exactly where it is, but I know from the real harsh winter that road got beat to a pulp and there was quite a few little slides up there.
Yeah. And you could get a slide not even on the road between the road and the river, you know. I mean, on the other side of the road that could wreak havoc with it. So,
exactly.
But anyway, that's just part of fishing. When it clears up, usually the fishing is better than when it muddied up. So, and then you're going to continue, you're going to plant again before Labor Day?
Yes, we'll have a large plant before Labor Day, and then we'll be doing 4, if not 5 more loads by the end of October for the rivers.
Okay, and as with the water, a lot of those fish going to go into the West Carson as well?
Yes, I'll be splitting the loads.
It's Todd Sedaro, Creekside Lodge in Markleyville. That number, 530-694-2511. I usually stay there, or the Woodford's Inn. Two good places to stay. Can't hardly beat it. Prices are good. The whole works. It's nice to know that even late in the season, they'll be planting the West Fork of the Carson, which is usually, well, during the drought anyway, I mean, it really suffered. It's not as big a drainage as the East Fork. It doesn't come from as high of mountains, but it's nice to see that there's enough water. I went by there yesterday, too, or should say Thursday, and there's plenty of water in that creek. So that's good news all the way around. After the break, hopefully Scott Laseth, back from his deer hunting trip in Montana? Yeah, I think so. Don't go away. The last I heard from Scott Laseth last week was that we have a deer down. And I don't know what happened after that.
Well, here's what happened after that. So I was in Paso Robles, and it was 100 degrees, and dressed out, I shot about a 165-pound blacktail, and which is big by blacktail standards.
That's a real big one.
Yeah, you know, they feed well in this vineyard in Paso Robles, and the way we hunted it isn't what you'd probably put on TV, but I'll tell you, there's no other way to do it. You cruise by the vineyard really, really, really slowly. And the vineyard's there, kind of rolling hills. And once the deer, once it gets hot, they just get in the shadows of those overhanging vines. And that's what they feed on, by the way. Apparently, they don't eat the grapes. They eat the vines, mm-hmm. and they eat the leaves, which doesn't do the plant any good. But then you spot and stalk. Then you kind of go up about a quarter of a mile and then work your way back. But they're kind of hard to find. Mine took a little while to find. And one of the lessons that I learned, which is what I want to talk about today, is hang time and aging of meat and why we do that, mm-hmm. with things like deer. And for the TV show, when I was there with Weatherby, by the way, and I shot a Weatherby Mark V, and it was with a 240 Weatherby Magnum, which is...
That's a sweetheart.
Does a wonderful job.
100 grain bullet at 3,400 feet per second. Am I right on that?
Yeah, at least 34. Yeah, that's crazy fast. And that's kind of what Weatherby's known for anyway.
Yeah.
They're fast loads. And we wanted to get, I wanted to cook some for the Sporting Chef TV show. So I went and cut out half of a backstrap. And, you know, it just... What it did was reemphasize the need for aging.
Yeah.
Tenderloins you can usually get away with, but a backstrap really requires, especially on a bigger animal like that, at least a week of hang time. And why is that? There's people that say, well, you don't need to age it, especially, you know, younger animals, you don't need to age that long. If you cut a piece of meat off within the first 24 hours, the first thing that anything happens with an animal when it dies is it goes through rigor mortis. If you cut a piece of meat off during that time, you're going to end up with a really tough piece of meat, which is what this backstrap was. It was tasted really good, but it was tough.
Mm-hmm.
So for those of us that deer hunt, you got to let that hang for at least 24 hours. And then for an older animal, letting it hang for about another week and a half, 2 weeks after that, what it does is there's an enzyme in the animal that is going to break down collagen. And collagen is that same stuff remember when you had your lips done and you wanted them all puffed up like that and you went and got the collagen injections? Remember that?
Yeah.
It's the same collagen that they used on your lips.
Oh, God.
So if you don't let that process happen where that collagen will break down the enzymes will break down the collagen, you're going to have a tough piece of meat. So, at home, if you've got a tough deer quarter or something, basically, even if it's been frozen, once it's thawed, put it in your garage refrigerator or in a cooler that's got lots of ice. It needs to be below 40 and above 34 degrees for the process to happen. But it will make a gigantic difference.
Now, let me ask you this. Can you, say, cut up a deer into packages and then put it in the refrigerator or a cooler and have the same effect?
You don't want to package it. You want it to be dry aged. So you want it to be exposed to the air. And that's going to get a little crusty on some parts, but you can cut that part off. But you don't want to, packaging it, you're not going to get the aging that you will when it's just exposed
okay.
to air.
Of course, that's a problem for a lot of us because, especially when you say under 40 degrees, like we used to hang deer for several days in the back patio in the shade and keep it covered up during the day and then open it up at night. But, you know, the temperature during the day might be 90 degrees. And
well,
yet
that's when bacteria happens.
Yeah. Well, it still seemed to work out okay.
Well, yeah, you got lucky. You didn't get sick. But really, Between 40 and 140 is really where a lot of, or 120 is where a lot of really nasty stuff happens. It's where bacteria gets in and your meat can actually rot as opposed to age. But you can take a big cooler and put ice in the bottom and just stick it in, and you put a thermometer in there so you can tell what that temperature is inside the cooler, and put a rack on it because you don't want the meat sitting in water. And you can age it that way also if you don't have room in the refrigerator, or let's say if somebody in your house doesn't like meat, big hunks of meat in the refrigerator.
Unwrapped.
I'm not naming names.
Unwrapped.
Unwrapped large hunks of meat getting a little crusty on the outside. Some people don't like that.
The best case scenario, I guess, is to somehow talk the butcher that cuts up your deer to hang the deer in there for a week before he cuts it up.
Yeah, and you know, and I don't know any of them that won't.
Yeah.
So they know how it works, and they're not gonna end up. But I'm looking forward to. I left the rest of mine there to be processed and aged, and I'll pick it up in October. And boy, there were quail everywhere too, which really.
Oh, that's good news.
I've got these two new puppies, and
there you go.
Find some quail.
Okay, why did I think you were in Montana?
Where am I? I'm in Grand Junction, Colorado. I had to think about it. I was in Lincoln, Nebraska on Wednesday feeding some homeless folks. Now I'm at the Peach Festival, which they asked about you here, and they wanted to know where's Bob, because he's always here at the Peach Festival in Grand Junction, Colorado. Palisade, Colorado.
Okay. All right.
I'm home next week, though.
Very good. Thank you, Scott.
Yeah, man. We'll talk to you.
Bye. Scott Lasef, the Sporting Chef, and that's sportingchef.com. Okay. Let's see. Do we have room? Yeah. That's a new lake record for crappie down at Lake Chabot in the Bay Area. I talked to John Poimaru of California Parks about it yesterday. You know, John, a lot of people that live in the Bay Area know how good the fishing can be in many of the Bay Area lakes. Outside the Bay Area, you know, people tend not to make that trip, but they could be missing something. For example, Lake Chabot has trout, it has bass, crappie, catfish, and it just produced a record. Tell me about that.
It was a real surprise this week. This record had stood for many years. It's a record for black crappie. It was caught on Wednesday, weighing 2.34 pounds, and it was released back into the lake, so it's still there to catch again. Francisco Escobar caught it. He lives down in Castro Valley, so he's got the opportunity to get over there pretty easily, although it isn't that long a drive to get down. You go down the Central Valley and cut over 580, and then Chabot is right off of 580. And the great thing is that it's a beautiful place to fish, and a lot of people in the Bay Area know about it.
So that's a beautiful crappie in any lake, but it is a lake record. What's the state record?
Well, the state record for black crappie is 4.1 pounds. That was caught back in 1975 over at New Logan in Calaveras County. And for white crappie is 4.8 pounds. That was caught by Carol Carlston in 71 at Clear Lake. So it's been a long time. In fact, this record at Lake Chabot stood for 28 years.
Wow. Wow. So, you know, that's, you know, you hear of crappie in many lakes topping the two-pound mark, and anytime you top a two-pound crappie, that is a special fish. I mean, I don't think there's any fish prettier than a big crappie, I mean, with all their markings and everything else, and let alone the wonderful table fare. So, and speaking of that, did he keep the fish?
No, and you know, if it were me, I'd almost be tempted, but no, he was a good angler. He said, I'm going to put this back for someone else to catch. But, you know, the crappie is one of the best-tasting freshwater fish around. And you can do wonderful things with it. You can make chowders out of it, fry it, do a cocktail sauce-type preparation, scampi, tostada. I mean, it really is a fish you can use a lot of
Your Italian
ways.
Is showing, John.
Yeah.
So he released it, huh? Now, I thought you told me you saw pictures of the fish on the scale and everything like that.
Yeah, you know, they brought it in, to the marina there at Lake Chabot. And Stan Wong, who runs the marina, took and he weighed it. And I saw the scale weight on it because this is a big crappie. And like you said, they are beautiful fish, black with these golden hints all the way through them, big, beefy fish. Just a beautiful guy. He was too good to eat. We let him back.
Yeah.
He went back in the lake.
Yeah. So even though they put him on the scale, they kept him alive, huh?
Oh, he was alive. No question. They brought him in a tub, and he was fine.
That was John Poimaru of California Parks talking about the crappie at Lake Chabot in the Bay Area off 580. After the break, Mark Wilson and lots of stripers. Don't go away. You know, every year there's a bunch of stripers that come into the Delta in August, usually in early August, and Decker Island is the center of them. And then after that, we don't know. It might last 10 days. Who knows? But it started this year, and all it's done is gotten better and better with more fish and some decent-sized fish. So I'm glad we broke the pattern. Of course, the guy that's all over it is Mark Wilson, who joins us now. That's a nice thing to have in August, isn't it?
And good morning. Yes. In fact, if you want to cool down and get out of the heat, just go down to the Delta. The wind, that sea breeze is coming in at about 20 miles, 25 miles an hour. It's cold. Two jackets on. You got overpants sometimes until about 1 o'clock, and then it turns to warm. But the wind and the splash keeps you cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's one positive thing about it. But overall, I hate wind.
Yeah.
But, well, you know, it's continued. We had real good tides. I think that really helped fish catching this week. They're going to get a little bit bigger next week. I might slow down a little bit. We'll see. But going back after them again. But all the boats that were out last week that I know of had good numbers, and some of them had good size. Up to 12, 13 pounds, a couple of them. One boat had a 20-pounder. I didn't. My biggest fish was 7 pounds, and then from there it was about 21, 22 inches down. But I caught 30 fish, so I had a lot of action.
Yeah, I'll say.
And a lot of the other boats did the same thing. So,
are you catching deep or shallow or both, Mark?
Actually, doing both. One time you go out there, like Decker Island is pretty much a deep troll. You go across on the west bank, you can troll deep and shallow over there. Go up to the Dairy, you can troll shallow there. Go over to San Joaquin. There's several shoals over there, and I've been catching them shallow trolling over there. And I switched off the rattle traps and went to Angry Eyes, and the Angry Eyes is, it turned out we got some nice fish, and in fact, our biggest fish over there, trolling the grass lines in about 6 to 7, 8 foot of water. And then come back over and around Dutch Slough and then False River and down there by the Antioch Bridge up against Sherman Island. We're all troll deep there, so you got all kinds of opportunities and different techniques, troll shallow, troll deep. And I tell you what, if they're there, you catch them. If they're not, move on. Go to another spot, because they're going to be somewhere.
Okay.
And, Broad Slough has got some fish in it now, so they're scattered all around that lower delta. Rio Vista down and mouth of 3 Mile there that comes into the San Joaquin down. We haven't gone up much. I don't know. I heard that one rumor last week about fish up there in the deep water channel, but I don't know anybody that went up there to check it out. I didn't, that's for sure. I've been staying where the fish are, and why leave fish to go find fish?
Yeah, yeah.
Greens are working good. Little chartreuse, so I don't care what it is. It's got a little green on the back, a little silver on the side, and pretty much going to catch fish. Or red and white or red and silver, the standard colors for stripers.
Yeah. Well, it's just nice to have that quality of fishing in August. And how, are there any crowds out there, Mark?
No. I think, I don't know. I know 5 boats are out there on, Wednesday, I guess it was. And I don't think I had more than two at a time, two others besides myself working a long stretch of water. So
yeah.
Everybody kind of scattered and went their own way, and they all caught fish.
Yeah, that's good.
Rod Slew was, I had a pretty good bite in the morning, but I couldn't get down there. I didn't want to fight the outgoing tide with the wind that lasts of the outgoing.
Yeah.
That wind coming in, there was pretty good rollers, but one of the boats went down there and they got in some good quality fish.
Yeah.
I went down there later on, they were gone. When the tide turned and come to income, I went down there, I heard the water dirtied up and a lot of grass, but it was pretty clean. But I never saw a fish, never caught a fish. I made a whole troll and got out of there.
Okay.
Went over to San Joaquin, worked my way back around, and wound up later on back over Decker Island again. So
yeah. Well, you made the loop?
Probably about 50, 60 miles.
There you go. Okay, Mark. Well, good luck this week. I'll be anxious to see what this week shows up fishing-wise. It should be good.
Well, then I bet we'll talk next week.
You got it. Thanks, Mark.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Mark Wilson. He's always happy when he's catching fish, isn't he? I talked to Gary Sino, who owns the Gull Lake Marina down in the June Lake Loop. You know, just about fishing in general down there and water conditions. Listen, Gary, has the additional water affected the lakes in the June Lake Loop, you think, that, like it has affected the streams throughout the Eastern Sierra?
I think it did earlier, Bob, in the spring. The water has kind of settled down in the loop.
Yeah,
and it's great to see that Grant Lake is once again full.
Sure,
that's the man-made lake, and in fact, because they're doing repairs on Gem and Agnew on the dam, they let out more water. So Rush Creek, that comes out of Grant, is now filling up Mono Lake. I heard 2-3 feet, which is quite a bit for that.
That's
size
huge
of lake.
For Mono Lake.
Well,
that's a healthy thing for that body of water, you bet.
Well, you know what happens when the water level, when we had those years of drought, the islands were such that the coyotes could traverse and eat the eggs of the seagulls.
Yeah.
So with this higher water, it really has helped a lot. And but the water's kind of calmed down now, and I think most of the streams that haven't had much fishing pressure because, you know, we had some chocolate water.
Yeah.
It was really unfishable. But it's, I think September is going to be
wonderful.
A good time to visit the Eastern Sierra.
Oh, you, I'm all for you. Has the, here we are in the middle of August. We've got most of summer behind us. How's Gull Lake holding up for the fishing?
It, you know, we've been blessed. We've had some great weather, and we continue to buy fish from the Desert Spring Hatchery, some monster trout, and fishing's been excellent. It's really, and I think the whole loop would tell you that business is probably up double digits, which is, you know, it's welcomed. Fishing remains good, and we're looking forward to the fall.
Yeah. Did I hear a 7-plus-pound rainbow was taken out of Gull Lake here?
It was just day before yesterday, and we're buying bigger fish. You know, we mm-hmm. like to claim that we're the home of monster trout, and so we buy the real big ones. We get also some stocking from the county. Mono County is...
And sometimes those are pretty, I mean, real good size, like 2-3 pounders.
Yeah, actually, it's this year, they've been 3-5 pounders.
Oh.
And so, yeah, if you're looking for some big fish, the Eastern Sierra, not just Gull Lake, of course, we're proud of our lake, but
yeah.
the whole loop is producing some nice fish, and... the streams are finally calming down where they're fishable, and I think in another couple of weeks, we'll be. That's what I'm saying. I think September will be a great time to visit.
Gary Sino down at Gull Lake Marina. Now, remember, a few weeks ago, he says, hey, for all your listeners on your program, if they, all you have to do is come down and mention they heard it on the program, and you can get half off a boat rental. Now, a boat rental, these are big 16-foot wide boats. They normally rent for $55 a day, so you can rent a boat all day on Gull Lake for $27.50 if you mention this program, okay? And here's the number. That's during the month of August, okay? Area code 760-648-7539. Back right after this. Welcome back, welcome back. I talked to Jim Fernandez at Fisherman's Friend. He, too, had some good things to say about stripers. And he got out in the ocean fishing for salmon, and we got a little bit more salmon news on Pardee. Listen, Jim, we've been having some pretty good reports on stripers. You get the same reports, I see.
We sure are. Actually, been going for about a good solid week. I wouldn't say it's wide open, but I would say that it's a heck of a good bite with a lot of nice quality fish.
Yeah. Now, where are you guys fishing?
They're down around Decker, and then just below Decker, trolling with both the deep and shallow, and then between lights 14 and 17 on the sack. And then we've had a few come in over from Edo's, but not the quality of fish that's coming in down on the Sacramento.
Yeah, I heard there's a lot of small schoolies on the San Joaquin side.
Right, that's what they were getting, a lot of 23, 22 inchers, and, and you know, but on the... over on the Sacramento, I mean, they're getting double-digit fish over there.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice fish.
Yeah, that's really nice. Of course, you know, every year we get a few fish in August around Decker Island. It's been happening for a million years, and we never know how many fish there are. Well, this year it seemed to be the start of something bigger, which is happening now.
It's sure nice to see because, you know, the other thing, the bonus is salmon are starting to move up through there, and there's been a few of the guys that said, hey, we even picked up some salmon when we were running the deep runners.
Yeah, there you go.
So there's a bonus for you there.
It's just going to start right now, so that's good. That's good.
That's right.
You were down there, weren't you? I know you were down ocean fishing.
Yes, we were out last week Tuesday, and then we went out again yesterday. And last week we fished there off of Pacifica and Pedro Point. We were using anchovies.
Uh-huh.
And we limited out. They aren't real big fish, you know. They're anywhere from 10 to 12 pounds, but they're very good eaters.
Well, that's a good, yeah, but, you know, another guy I talked to today had a 12-pound average. That's a good average.
Yeah, it is. And these were nice fish.
Yeah.
Yesterday, we, same style of fish, maybe a little bit thicker, a little bit heavier, but we were in right off the pier there, Pacifica, and we were in, the bait balls were all over the place in close. If you moved out further, no bait balls, but the fish were right in there, and you had to be right off the bottom, and that's where the salmon were, and we picked them up.
How deep of water?
Yesterday we were in anywhere from 40 to 44 feet of water.
And you were fishing right on the bottom?
Right down on the bottom. I mean,
beautiful.
We were bouncing off the bottom a couple of times. We were, you know, bringing them up, but that's where we got them.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good. Now, back up to the foothills. Pardee, I understand, has turned back on a little bit.
It is. It's
for kokanee.
Right, the kokanee, it's you don't have as many boats out there, and they're starting to pick up fish. They're still not going up the river. They're still out at the mouth of the main part of the lake and just south, but they are picking them up. Pink and purple seem to be the hot colors on hoochies, and the guys are picking up some nice fish in the 14 to 15 inch.
That's very nice.
And very thick, very nice fish.
Good. How deep?
They're running anywhere from about 35 at first light down to about 65, maybe 70 feet at the deepest.
You know,
a
while back, Jim, the bite slowed because just a couple of fishermen were aware of it, but those fish were down at 100, 110 feet.
That's right.
But that's not happening there now, or we don't know because we don't have to go that deep.
They don't seem to be having to go that deep. One of the reasons, I think, too, Bob, is they're, you know, three or four weeks ago, they were trying to get down to those fish that were deeper, and they were having a problem. They couldn't get through the trout going down. The trout would seem to be hitting them, and now
problems.
Yeah, you know. You know, when you're a fisherman, those are the kind of problems you like.
Yeah,
to
right,
have, you know?
Right. Okay, you got some black bass, Delta black bass?
Yes, the bass in the Delta, it hasn't been wide open, but it's been very steady. We've got our regular guys that have been going out there. They're getting some really nice fish. You know, no big monsters, but it's steady. And they're fishing in the mats. They're punching, using soft plastics, using Cinco's. And when that sun gets up, if you can get into some of the waters that are shaded up around the trees, you'll get some bass in the chatterbaits and work the tules, the patches of tules, and they seem to be holding in there. And that's been, well, I've got three or four guys that have been doing that, and they've been getting them for the last good solid week and a half, 2 weeks.
Jim Fernandez at Fisherman's Friend in Lodi. Getting out and doing it and keeping an eye on things. Their number down there, 209-369-0204. As soon as we get back from the news break, we'll check with Don Paganilli. He was out at Folsom Lake. Yep, Folsom Lake in the middle of August catching bass. And, of course, we'll have lots of other stuff in the last hour. Don't go away. And this is the third hour of the KPK Outdoor Show. I'm Bob Sims. Let's see, we're in our 26th year of doing this program. Started out from 5 to 7, now we're 5 to 8. We've been 5 to 8 for, I don't know, either 6 months or 8 years, whichever comes first, I lose track. Always nice to have you here from 5 to 8 every Saturday on KPK 1530 AM and 93.1 FM. Well, you know, a lot of people just don't think of Folsom Lake in the middle of August for fishing. Well, if you're Don Paganilli, you go out there and you know you can catch fish, and you do. And he joins us now to tell us about it. Hi, Don.
Good morning, Bob.
So, crowded out there, was it?
No, not very crowded during the week. Probably the best time to get out there.
Yeah.
Actually saw more bass boats than skiers for the first time.
Wow, so, that's unusual.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Topwater bite in the morning was there. We caught a few fish doing that. No big fish, just a pound and a half to 2 pounds. A lot of fun to catch on topwater. Stayed pretty much in the main body, fishing a lot of the submerged willows on some of the points. On both the South Fork side and the North Fork side, just kind of jumping back and forth. And then switched over to drop shot, throwing Senkos, Carolina rigs. A gentleman that I had out there was trying to learn all this stuff firsthand, so he wanted as much knowledge of fishing the lake as much as fishing techniques, so we jumped back and forth fishing a lot of different things. We caught fish on plastics, tried to stay on points, and trying to find cover with some of these submerged willows. We saw a lot of bait, which was very promising.
You did, huh?
And yeah, a lot of bait out there.
Now, is that pond smelt or threadfin or both?
I think it's a little bit of both. I saw one school of fish that looked pretty good size. It looked bigger than pond smelt, so they had to be some shad. We started grabbing a lot of fish on points and drop shotting them. We caught a couple fish drop shotting on some of these baits that we saw down deep, maybe 25, 30 feet. Seemed to be where a lot of bait was holding on some of these points. Not so much on structure like brush or stuff like that. We were grabbing them on some rocky points and missed a lot of fish. But that's drop shot fishing. Sometimes you feel a little grab and you just lift, and they either have it by the tail or they don't, one or the other. So, I mean, it, when you come up and there's no bait on the end of your hook, you know that he just grabbed a hold of it and you just pulled it off. So, so we're jumping back and forth between either a shad pattern robo worm, like a morning dawn, and going over to Aaron's magic color, which is a dark brown green color.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to see which one they wanted more than the other, and it was tough. I mean, the bite wasn't red hot. Water's still really warm. Surface temp was in the high 70s. So I don't know if there's just so much bait that they're not on a big frenzy feed like sometimes you find them. But we caught, you know, scattered fish. We never got on any groups of fish. We'd catch one or two here and then one or two there, and just kind of bouncing around on some of these points and stuff.
What's it take to catch a big fish like that in the summer? I mean, yeah, these fish are down 25 and 30 feet, and until you take a temperature reading, that still could be pretty warm water. I mean, these fish could be a bigger fish could be deeper now, don't you think?
They could. I've seen some of these bigger fish in the morning, early mornings, move up in the main body on some of these outside points, just chasing bait, and then they'll go down. But with as much bait as I saw in the system all over the place, they could be almost anywhere, anywhere from, you know, from the top all the way down to 30 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hit and miss. You know, you're looking and you're hunting, and you just never know. Sometimes you'll run into some better fish.
It just seems odd, just because, just to be the devil's advocate, you know, and kind of a pain in the rear. I mean, you're seeing a lot of bait, and the fish are kind of tough to catch. But we see lots of bait in the spring. We see lots of bait in the fall, and you can have pretty good fishing. You know, I wonder what the difference is.
Well, I think, like you said, it's got a lot to do with the water temperature too. They're probably a lot more comfortable in 60 to 65 degree water than they are in 75 to 80 degree water.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm targeting points in that are close to deep water, places where those bigger fish can move up real easy and then move back down. They're not going to be on those big flats or anything like that where it takes them a while to get to comfortable water. That's why I like to fish the points and stuff that drop off to deeper water pretty quick. You know, and then Berryessa, we were at Berryessa this week too, and we were into size more than we were into small fish. So that was, you know, flipping the coin the other way. We were catching better fish up there, not as many, but they were all quality size fish. And again, we were fishing, you know, over bait schools, drop shotting on points. The top water bite up there wasn't as good as I thought it would be, but the water's really warm, so I have a feeling that the better fish were down on these points, and that's where we found them.
How big a fish?
Up to 4.5 pounds was the best spotted bass. He'd never caught a spotted bass before, and he caught that one. It was pretty good.
That's great.
That was on drop shot on these points. And, I mean, we were metering a lot of fish, and you could see them on the graph where you'd be sitting on one spot and they'd disappear from the screen and then they'd reappear again, and they're just pushing bait back and forth on these points, and you just stay with it, and all of a sudden you see fish and you get bit. So we had one smallmouth come to the boat, and the rest were all spotted bass and largemouth. So, but they were better quality fish instead of running into a bunch of small fish. If I'd have stayed up shallow, you know, throwing Senkos and stuff like that, we probably would have caught a lot of small fish. But you're trying to find better fish, and you're hoping that they're down there chasing that bait.
Yeah.
And we tried to do the same thing at Folsom, and all we found were, you know, those 1.5 to 2 pound fish. I mean, they're fun to catch, don't get me wrong, but you're trying to find, like I said, some of the better fish. You know they're out there. And you just keep
Well, you know, when you can go out and catch bass in the middle of August, it's got to be a good day.
Well, yeah, they're there. It's just you just don't see as many people going up there fishing as you usually do. I think they're trying to stay away because of all the crowds. But if you can sneak a day during the week to get up there, I think it's well worth it.
Yeah, and you know, it's not going to be too much longer where that fishing should improve. As soon as we start getting some cool nights, that'll start some a different kind of bite, don't you think?
Well, yeah, talking to him about the fall bite up there has been in the past when we have a fall anyway. When we start having the cooler nights and that surface temperature starts to drop, then you start getting a better reaction bite, meaning you start getting a better topwater bite.
Yeah.
Spooks.
Yeah.
And you get these fish that start getting a little bit more aggressive because they're in a better temperature range, so they're not as sluggish. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that, too. That's good. Don, thank you so much. That's a good report on both those lakes. Good luck this week, and we'll talk to you very soon.
You bet. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you. Don Paganelli of Don Paganelli's Bass Fishing Experience. His number to book a trip, 916-502-3474. It's amazing how many people go with him to learn not only the lake, but how to use all this different stuff. He's really a jewel when it comes to that. Okay, after the break, we're going to have some more on Sacramento River salmon and big kokanee at Whiskey Town. You know, just listening to the Rahaga's commercial, remember next weekend is the big Terry Rahaga Memorial Barbecue. It's really well attended. They get tons of raffle prizes for everybody. It's a great dinner. The whole works, and all the proceeds go to Cancer Society. So that number up there, 530-724-0552. Then they have a one-day rattlesnake avoidance coming up on the 30th. Of September, just one day. So keep that in mind as well. You know, we normally give away pasties at about 7:45. Well, that's changing right now. We're going to give away three pasties. The Pasty Shack will send you a certificate for three pasties of your choice to the eighth caller at 921-1530, 800-834. 1530. Choose between the Cornish, the Bavarian, the Chili Verde, the chicken, the vegetarian. They're so good. I mean, you walk into the Pasty Shack at 48th and J and take one whiff, and if you've just eaten, it makes you hungry. Anyway, I'll tell you one thing. That's the way I felt every time I've ever walked in there. It's so good. Anyway, good luck. The eighth caller, 921-1530, 800-834-1530, and thank you to the Pasty Shack at 48th and J in Sacramento. Talk to Kurt Portocarrero. He had an interesting day yesterday fishing two different lakes. Listen, Kirk, I got to say, when it comes to a hard-working guide, you are it. You went to Shasta Lake this morning and fish for rainbows, and then finish the day because your customers wanted to catch some kokanee over at Whiskey Town. Yeah. That's a long day.
Yeah, it was. I sometimes wonder, but yet I thought to myself, you know, you always want to take care of your people. And they wanted salmon, and we weren't getting the salmon on Shasta, so I told them, let's pick it up. We had nine rainbows in the box. Beautiful rainbows, 18 inches, 19-inch fish.
Beautiful.
And they said, we want salmon, and I don't think I could have handled any more the rest of the day with we want salmon. So I changed things up, and we loaded the boat up and went to Whiskey Town and ended up with nine more kokanees by 1 o'clock, 1:30.
Beautiful.
And they're beautiful. All of them were real nice fish. They were all big fish, and I say big, I say 15 and over, and they're getting the hook jawed a little bit now.
Yeah,
they're starting to change, but they're beautiful, silver and gorgeous. And hey, you know what? And I will tell you this, Bob. I was getting about 100 feet. First time this year, I got them at 100 feet.
Wow.
But I did fish during a week, and I went in there and got a few more at 100 feet, too, so I knew they were that deep. But 100 feet I was getting today and the other day, so.
Well, I mean, you got once you get them dialed in.
But I'm still catching limits out there, so that's good.
Yeah, that is good. What were you using for the kokanee?
Same thing, you know, your wiggle hoochies and different colored things that I use out there that I've been using for years. You know, the kokanee fishing, you just use your stuff and go out there and catch them. But anywhere from wiggle hoochies to wedding rings, you know, you're all good on that.
It's amazing. What lure has stood the test of time better than a wedding ring?
Yeah, wedding rings were working great. I had a green wedding ring today with double hooks and a gold blade, and we caught more on that one than anything else.
Yeah. Where'd you get your rainbows in Shasta?
We were running Weetads and they use them in the ocean, you know, the little...
Brads?
No, not Brads. Oh, gosh.
Here we go again.
I should know them, but my brain's out of...
You're tired.
I'm fried is what I am. Not tired, I'm fried. any shad paddle lure on the small end
Apex,
is working on Shasta.
Apex.
Apex, correct. That's it, yeah. Same as what I use. The Apex and the Weetads I use lots of times, and then some spoons once in a while.
Yeah.
Small ones.
Did color seem to make a difference? How deep were you fishing for the rainbows?
120.
And did color make a difference?
No, sir.
Okay. Just the action and the noise.
Yes, sir.
And you put a Dodger in front of it.
Of course. And slow rolling, you know, nice and easy.
Yeah.
And basically, just taking your time out there and just waiting. Don't get in a hurry, but you'll get double hookups. And if you stay till 1 o'clock, you'll catch more fish from 11 to 1 than you will from... 6 to 10.
Really? That's just the way it is? You think it's just a moon phase? Or?
A lot of guys leave when it gets hot and the fishing gets better.
Okay, there you go. Pressure lightens up.
Yes, sir.
Okay, what's the latest on the salmon on the upriver?
Salmon, Justin, one of my guides went out, my main guide, Justin, he went out on Tuesday and got 4 for 5, and that was between Balls Ferry and Red Bluff. So he was in the canyon. He went in the canyon and picked away at them. They hooked 5 and landed 4, so they're starting to come up. And then I had reports today of my friends that fished out of Corning, and they ended up getting 3 to 4 a boat today.
That is cool. That's the first time we've heard good stuff out of Corning.
Yep, first time. So they had to start coming. I knew from reports of the ocean, guys slowing down away this week. I think some of those schools moseyed up underneath the Golden Gate and came this direction.
Kurt Portocarrero of SackRiverGuide.com for the website. He updates it every single day. His number is 800-670-4448. That's 800-670-4448. And because everybody's waiting on the salmon, they wanted to see what happened. For the first time, he says that I can ever remember, I still have 6 days left in September. That's really the best salmon fishing up there. So if you want to go with Kirk, he still has 6 days left in September. That's pretty amazing. All right. Okay. I talked to Pam Hammack at the West Walker Motel in the town of Walker about fishing the West Walker River. Pam, it was fun stopping by to see you and then actually running into the fisherman that caught that big, that 5-pound brown that I'd heard about the day before, and find out all the details of him hooking it and playing it and how it was a fish of a lifetime, and it was a great picture, too. So, and talking to his friend about, normally an 18-inch brown is the talk of the camp, but he was overshadowed, wasn't he?
Yes, it was, and he's still talking about it. And, yeah, it was actually close to 6 pounds and 24 inches. It was a beautiful fish.
Wow.
You can see it out on the
and
on the Facebook.
And the same two guys caught quite a few rainbows.
Oh, they caught a lot of rainbows, yes. Yesterday was a good day for that, all up and down the Larson-Cunningham area. They love that area.
So, and that's what that extra water gave us this year, because usually that water is a little, you know, it warms up by this time, but now it's just in prime condition, and people are sure taking advantage of it. Hey, and I wanted to ask you, with this year being so exceptional with the water, Are people aware that they're going to have maybe the best September they've ever had up in that area?
I hope they're aware, and we're going to try to make it out there to be aware. We certainly are going to be placing fish in through the end of September.
Oh, that's great. Yeah,
absolutely. We're focusing on that because we knew we would have a beautiful September.
Well, I tell you what.
With the fall colors and the fish, it's a beautiful weekend here.
I'll tell you one thing. With those fall colors, and, you know, we don't normally have the water to provide great fishing in September, and this year is the exception. And personally, I can't wait. I mean, I love that country anytime, but when the colors start to creep in there and you're catching big trout, how do you beat that?
You just can't. It's a beautiful area. It's a beautiful river, and, you know, there's many different ones of it. The Little Walker, the West Walker, Pickle Meadows, all of that. It's all going to be gorgeous and stocked and ready.
That's Pam Hammack at the West Walker Motel. It's quite a place. Everybody gathers around. Actually, Pam's backyard, she knows what's going on from every fisherman that stays there and therefore can point you in the right direction. Her number, 530-495-2263. And if we have time, we've got another great report from Tim Fesco that about some fishermen that caught a whole bunch of fish just yesterday. Welcome back. Well, Eagle Lake, last year was really tough. This year was expected to be just as tough, but I think it's a little bit better. And I talked to Val Aubrey, very interesting on her take on this year versus last year. Listen, Val, Eagle Lake has had its share of challenges the last couple of years, but let me ask you some hypothetical thing. Throw out the worst years like last year and throw out the best years like maybe a few years ago. And as far as average fishing at Eagle Lake, how is this year stacking up so far?
It's still a tough year. And, you know, what we had to do was learn from last year, which was absolutely horrible. We do have fewer fish in the lake. We got a lot of tui chubs. I mean, I still got, you know, half a dozen tui chubs today, but I was in the trout too. But, you know, we had to learn how to deal with this green water because that is new to this lake. And, you know, especially in the summertime. Our average surface temperature is pretty much on keel with what it's always been in the heat of the summer, low 70s. But with the blue-green algae, it's our dissolved oxygen has changed to where the trout are holding, for me, a little higher in the water column. And you got to kind of think about green and cloudy and what can they see. So red was a good color last year. Red is my color this year.
Still.
So, yes, absolutely. And I've been doing pretty well. I've got other people doing well as well. There are, you know, probably a half a dozen lures that are actually doing quite well. It's been a matter of the action of the lure and slowing down. And most people on this lake are used to trolling fast.
Yeah, because the water's usually clear.
The water's usually clear. The trout are usually more active. And, you know, we've got so many tui chubs in the lake right now that when you get that, what I call the nursery tui chubs, which are subsequent years of tui chubs, and they are everywhere. They move the trout out. You got to find the small little clouds of tui chubs that have just hatched this year. So one of my things is I look for a lot of baby grebes. This is our first year since 2012 that we've had baby grebes, and those parents want to feed them little food.
That's interesting.
And the trout, all they want is the little dumb minnows. So, you know, sometimes you just got to get into the minnows, and I will set my depth finder on fish ID because the fish ID will tell me if I've got the nursery hatch of tui chubs, which is the you know, many years worth,
yeah,
or the cloud of bait fish that are so small that they don't even scope as fish, just
yeah.
A cloud.
I see.
And that's what I'm looking for.
So the lure you're using, you're still using the Thomas Buoyant?
I can't get away from it. It is my most successful lure on this lake this year, and I wished I could catch them on flies right now. That will come as soon as I get some cooler water temps.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to fix something that isn't broken.
Yeah. Well, and you're still using the red and gold?
Red and gold, red and gold all the way. I had three of them in today. I had eight trout and a half a dozen tui chubs, but I had eight trout that were, you know, besides that, three of those were shakers. One didn't survive. The rest were 2 1/4 to 4 pounds.
Beautiful. And how deep were you?
I was running four colors, about 20 to 23 feet deep today.
And what speed?
1.9 was every fish.
That's Val Aubrey. She does dial it in, doesn't she? Check her website and her fishing reports, eaglelakefishing.net. I told you there was another report from the West Walker. Well, I talked to Tim Fesco. I stayed at Meadowcliff Lodge on Wednesday night, and he and I were going to go down into the East Carson, but it turned muddy. So we fished, and he caught a beautiful 18-inch trout. I caught a 14-incher fly fishing behind his place at Meadowcliff, and we probably could have caught more if the wind and the rain hadn't come up. But anyway, he called me excited yesterday. A couple fishermen that had been staying with him just came in. Listen, Tim, I got a report from Pam Hammack down the road from you, but then you called with a couple of guys that just did exceptional today fishing the West Walker. What happened?
Yeah, you know, some guests of mine, they've been here for a few days doing pretty good, but they said they just slammed it yesterday. They had, there was four of them, and they ended up catching 30, 40 fish between the four of them.
Wow.
The largest was about 3 pounds.
All rainbows?
Several two-pounders. All rainbows.
Uh-huh.
And they were heading out today. They were checking out, but they said, we're going to end up getting home late tonight because we know we're hitting this river once again.
Yeah. Wow. So what section were they fishing?
You know, they were fishing up at the bridge, which is where the Little Walker and the West Walker come in.
Uh-huh.
That's a pretty good water spot right now.
Yeah.
But they were actually at the Mountain Gate day use area, which is just...